All right, good evening, everyone. This is Rochelle Wilhite, the designated broker for Best Choice Realty. We are going to be covering contracts, the listing contracts that are needed, in great detail. We're going to go through the typical forms I would take on a listing appointment and the common mistakes that I hear see as we go about this tonight. So be sure to take notes if you have a notebook as you're going through this call tonight. And let's go through with the very first form, Form 1A. Now, if you're on the MLS, you can go ahead and go into the computer and then go into nwmls.com. And I'm going to go through the documents fairly quickly from now until 6 o'clock. So I will, as I go through these, I'll give you enough time to click over onto the MLS and actually pull up the document so you have that in front of you. So Form 1A, there are actually two agreements that could be used for taking a listing. And this works for commercial, it works for land, it works for residential and condo. Any type of property type that you're working with, you have a choice between a Form 1A or a Form 1B. I don't even bring up the 1B. There are a couple of our brokers that have used the 1B in their career, and that's fine if you've got approval from me to do that. But we are going to specifically talk about 1A because that's the form we use 99.9% of the time. So go ahead and open up Form 1A. And what this is and the common mistakes that we see on Form 1A is, and it's very, very important, the number one mistake that we have and that the MLS has tried to control a bit more is the legal description. They allow for us to take a listing, put it on the Northwest MLS, but if you do not add a legal description as a supplement in the first 3 days of taking the listing, then in essence they flag you and there could be a fine of $50. So you'll want to make sure that you always, when you go out on the listing appointment, the number one thing that I'm going to do is contact my title company. There are many that we select from. Call the title company and let them know you're going on a listing appointment and that you need a copy of the legal description as soon as possible. If the title company is unable to provide that within 15 to 20 minutes, find a different title company that will provide that to you. You need it because you need it for the agreement, for the Exhibit A. So it's required. It's not something that's optional. If you don't have an Exhibit A or legal description when you take a listing, in essence, you don't have a valid listing, and somebody else could take the listing or the seller could find a different broker to represent them. It is not a valid listing agreement. So be sure you have a legal description, and it's something you pull from title company. It doesn't say Exhibit A. Be sure you write Exhibit A on the top of the legal description and then go ahead and include that with your Form 1A. It really should be attached. Okay? And then the other common mistake I see on the listing 1A form is the listing date must be filled in. If it's different, if it's changed, or if the seller changed their mind and crossed it off and wrote something else in that date, it must have an initial. It really should have an initial from you and from the seller on the list date change on term 3. If you don't have a date in that section, it also is not considered valid. Somebody else could come in and take the listing from you. So make sure you fill out in term 3 the list date. And if it needs to be different, you either need an amendment or you need to have your initial and the seller's initial on that date change. Otherwise, you can look at a fine, and the fines for that is quite significant because in that section in Term 3, it talks about the agent and the firm cannot pre-market, cannot advertise the property, and so that date becomes very muddy, and the MLS is holding agents accountable to proper marketing and proper list date of your listing. So be sure that if you do have a discrepancy or a change that's made, probably, like say I had list date 2 weeks from now and my seller calls me, and they did. They called me and said they're not ready for photos for a week later. Then I need to have their initial on that change, and I need to get that approved before I list the property. So that's another number two mistake I see. Number one mistake would be the legal description not being attached. or not uploaded soon enough or attached with the seller's initial. And the number two mistake is the list date not being filled in or filled in improperly without proper initials. The next one is what I kind of find humorous, but it happens more times than you think. On the commission rate must be filled out also, and it must be appropriate. When I talk about appropriateness of the commission, plain and simple, a lot of you guys are doing it incorrectly. The top line is the total commission, and the bottom line in term four is the amount of commission that out of the total commission we pay the buyer's agent. Make sure that is filled in properly. If some people have made rookie mistakes where they put 3 and 3, in essence, they thought it was a 6% commission, but it needed to be 6% in the top line and 3% in that second line. So don't make that mistake. A lot of rookies make that mistake, and then we have to end up having them work for free. That's not your intent. Your intent is to the total commission goes in that top line. Now, if you are doing a flat fee listing, there has been a couple times where, you know, your mom is selling their property or there's a special deal you're doing to represent them on the buy side, and then you want to do some sort of special deal on the commission. Be sure if it's a flat fee, you write in, and if it's a flat fee commission rate that you're doing for the listing, on section 4 in the total commission, there's more space in the dollar section to write 3%, the plus sign, and then whatever flat fee you're doing. That would be the appropriate way of writing a flat fee commission into the 1A. I don't encourage flat fees. There's a lot of work that goes into full representation, but there has been some cases where either you're selling your own home or you're selling your mom's home or doing some sort of agreement like that, and it needs to be done properly. If it's a 3 and a 3, meaning there's no commission owed, you will owe the house or Best Choice Realty, you'll owe us the minimum amount that we can charge, which is 538.07. It's inclusive of tax and insurance. So, and B&O, business and occupation tax. So be sure that you are properly putting it together and you have number in this top section, you're having the legal description. Number 3, you're putting in the list date. And number 4, you're putting the commission in correctly. The last page, or the last thing I'll talk about on the 1A is on the bottom where it says, are the undersigned the sole owners? Yes or no. When you check that box, what you are agreeing to do is to make sure that the person that's on the last vesting deed is indeed the person listed as the seller. So you may have to have title do a check. I have run into a couple situations actually in the last month where our listing agent has went ahead and put a 1A together, thought they had the right seller, and when I actually look at the legal description or the last vesting deed, it actually is incorrect, meaning maybe the husband is getting divorced from the wife, or there's a death in the family, and it has to be properly signed below in the seller's signature. Whatever the case may be, when you check that box, that should be a reminder to you that you need to make sure you check the last vesting deed with title to make sure that the seller that you listed on the first page is indeed the seller who should be signing at the bottom of the listing agreement. That is how you protect yourself to make sure you have a valid listing agreement and a way for you to collect a commission. Okay, when I explain the 1A to my seller, I don't go through, I print this out, I make sure that they have a copy of the 1A. If I'm doing it electronically, they would in essence have a copy for them to reflect on. If I'm doing it electronic signature, but most of the time I actually am printing out the 1A and giving them a copy of what they signed. That would be appropriate. If you are not doing that, you're really practicing improperly. And you, at some point in your real estate career, I'll probably get a phone call from your seller and threatening to cancel the deal. And one of the reasons they'll say that they want to cancel is because they did not get a copy of the agreement that they signed. And they are entitled to an agreement of a copy of this agreement. So make sure you leave them a copy, or at a bare minimum, you send them an email after you get done meeting with them that has a copy of the 1A and also a copy of the pamphlet, the Law of Agency pamphlet. Make sure you're giving your sellers the Law of Agency pamphlet. It says so in term 2. So if you've done that, then you have practiced you've done your duty and you've practiced real estate correctly when it comes to listing a property. Now, quite frankly, that's the only agreement that's really necessary to take a listing. So if you only had 2 pages in your car and you filled in this information and you got a copy of the legal description, you could potentially have your paperwork that you need to collect a commission and practice real estate for a seller. However, there are some additional addenda that is very helpful to have along with you. The next form I'm going to go to is Form 18. If you could go with me, take a moment real quick if you're on the MLS, and go ahead and open Form 18. Form 18 is an amendment to the exclusive sale and listing agreement. You put on the date, and you put the seller's name and the property address and the city. And if there is a listing number, you would write the listing number. In my case, when I print out a Form 18 and I have that on hand, there would not be a listing number in that section, but it does have it's like a blank addendum. It's a way for you to communicate with the seller if there was something that needed to be addressed. I usually check the other box and clearly state what I'm agreeing to do when it comes to marketing costs. So for example, if I'm doing staging at no additional cost to the seller, I may write that. Or if there's a staging amount that we've agreed on, I'll write that into the contract. The seller will pay XYZ staging company such and such a dollar to cover the staging. That can be written into this amendment. If you are providing an ultimate open house with Best Choice Realty signs, you could write that into the other section. Anything above and beyond the call of duty that would be normal, you know, that you're doing something as a cost or more extensive than a typical listing agreement, you could write that into the Form 18. Other things I've seen on the Form 18, which would be good, would be if your seller is really set on a certain price and you have done your CMA and you understand or they understand and you want to put this in writing that you want to have a price reduction done every 2 weeks or every month or whatever the sequence may be, you can, in essence, negotiate that price change by checking the other and writing, seller agrees to reduce the price to such and such if no offers are received by such and such a date. You could fill in the blanks there. So that's the kind of things I see on a Form 18. A lot of our top listing agents use a Form 18 to negotiate certain marketing things they do or price reductions that are pre-negotiated. Those are the types of things I see. There will be a case or two in your real estate career where you may have the seller say, you know, I want to sell to my neighbor. My neighbor has expressed interest. And or maybe that they are willing to pay you, you know, it's a 2.5% commission, but anything above and beyond, say a price of $400,000, maybe they'll pay you a 3% on that amount. Again, that would need to be spelled out into a contract, and this is the only contract that I want to see you write something like that in. Before you do some sort of exception, it would be a simple text message to me saying, Rochelle, hey, I'm in a listing appointment. I have a seller who's wanting to do this type of commission rate. How do I write that? And I will be happy to provide you with that language. Anytime you write commission onto a Form 18, you're rewriting the listing agreement that's on the Form 1A. So just realize that you look at the Form 18 like a Form 34, where you use extreme caution at what you want to write on here and how you want to draft it, because the seller could come back or issue a complaint or file a complaint or get an attorney to represent them to fight you or to fight the real estate firm that's representing them, which would be Best Choice Realty. So be very cautious when you write on this other section, but it is a tool that is meant to help you when you get stuck with situations that, hey, you're exempting the neighbor, for example, Billy Bob, from purchasing the property. So no listing commission would be offered, or only 538.07 would be offered if the neighbor represents himself. The likelihood of that happening is very slim, but it does happen. And it does get a seller to go ahead and sign the listing agreement and deal with that objection that may arrive when you're sitting there on the spot with the seller discussing all the ins and outs of how you're going to list and market their property. When you get an objection, you don't want to have the objection be something that you can't overcome. And having a Form 18 on hand will allow you the flexibility that's necessary to sometimes seal the deal and get the seller to work with you. So use Form 18 rarely, but it is used strategically to make things happen for you. So I have some copies of Form 18 in my car just in case I may need that when I'm going on a listing appointment. Okay, the next form we'll talk about would be the Form 7s. They are in the Form 7 sections if you're going back to the MLS. There are all these different forms that may be required by the Northwest MLS. There's 7A, 7B, 7C, 7E, 7F, 7G, 7H, 7I, 7U. Plenty of forms, supplements mostly, that you could use if you were potentially going on a listing appointment. The only one I use quite regularly would be the 7, let's see, nope, not the 7, they used to have 7D, they removed it now, but it's the, let me see here, showing seller's request for undisclosed address, 7B, that's the one we use all the time. 7B is the seller's information undisclosed. So if I have a vacant listing, and I know I have a vacant listing, but I have a good relationship with the seller, I will often have the seller sign a 7B when I meet with the seller so that I can omit the seller's phone number from the listing. And the reason I do that is because I want to avoid the poachers. And the poachers are people, when I cancel or if I have to cancel, what will happen is that phone number gets syndicated to all the portals. It gets kind of tagged or assigned to that particular listing. And so if there's a change made, for example, an expiration, a cancellation that I made on the MLS because of the term of the agreement, what happens is all the poachers would contact my seller. So by having a Form 7B on the property when I have a vacant listing, it omits the seller's phone number and name from the listing, and then I don't have the poacher situation. However, when the listing gets canceled or expired, I have the ability to negotiate with my seller and relist the property at their time frame in the way that they want things handled. So, you know, the only time I wouldn't need the 7B would be if there's a home that where the seller is going to live there and they need to make arrangements to show it. Then ultimately, I don't need a 7B. I go ahead and just do a normal listing agreement. But I do have a 7B for vacant listings. It super helps when I need to omit the seller's name or phone number from the listing. Also, that would work when you have a prestigious, we have had some luxury sales where the seller didn't want to have their name on the listing, didn't want to have their phone number on the listing. This would also be the form to handle that. The Form 7B does not just get uploaded to support at Best Choice Realty WA and gets assigned to your or attached to your listing paperwork. Where you need to send that is the MLS. You would send that to listings, listings, input, input, at nwmls.com. And they have that recorded as a letter on file, and they don't actually show that, but it shows as a supplement when they upload it for you on your listing, and that's the way it looks. So there are times when you may need to do a temporary off the market. Maybe the seller had a flood in their basement and they're having some repairs to do. Also, that would be a letter on file or a special request by the seller. That can be done on a Form 19. Form 19 is used and it requires the seller's initial if there are temporary off the market, cancellations, expirations, or modifications to the showing instructions that would, in essence, would be a violation to the rules of conduct, but you are getting the seller's approval to exempt them from that. You would use a Form 19 and request that they sign it, and I also have to sign that and initial it. So you can prepare the Form 19. That's an internal ongoing form that we sometimes have to use. And I like that form not sent to me as a PDF where I have to print and scan and use it. Go ahead and include me, since I have to sign it as well, include me as one of your signers if you're doing electronic you need an electronic broker approval for some sort of change like that, that you cannot make on your own. So that's Form 19, Form 18, the Form 7s. Really, the other Form 7s I would not use. Only special circumstances would provide, would I advise you to use a different 7, Form 7. All the rest are used rarely, so we're not going to cover them tonight. But you can be aware that there are some other types of exclusions that you may want to look at in circumstances, and I'll bring them to your attention as you run into things. But you, for the most part, will not need those. And it creates more confusion for buyer's agents if you start to use more than the 7B. Okay? The last form I will cover is the Form 1. Form 1 is, and it's the Form 1, it's the Form 10 for condos. It's the form, there's another form for multifamily. I think it's form, there's commercial, it's Form 14. And then also, I think it's the business opportunities for Form 16. These are all the listing input sheets, Form 1, Form 10, Form 16, Form 17. Those forms are used for inputting onto the MLS. Now, if you've taken the listing class, which many of you have, because we require that class to be taken in order for you to list your own properties with Best Choice Realty, you necessarily don't need to have all of that filled out. It's not a required document for our firm at this time. It might change if people start getting sloppy, but for the most part, I'm seeing some really good attention to detail and oversight when you are inputting the listing onto the MLS. So when you are doing that, you're basically going, if you do it through Transaction Desk, you go into Form 1, for example, data entry, all of the information that you have accessible to you, and once you get most of the majority of the items into Form 1 or 10 or 16, 17, then you would, or I'm sorry, 16, then you would go ahead and there's a button in the upper right-hand corner that says upload to the upload listing, and you would click that button and it would give you a temporary or a placeholder for an incomplete listing number. When that's done, everything from that point on is tracked in the MLS. Anytime you do a price reduction, anytime you change the marketing remarks, anytime you change the agent remarks, anytime you take off that it's FHA or VA financing, or you add some financing terms, or modify the listing in any regard, you need to recognize that anytime you do that, you are acting on the seller's behalf. And the MLS is tracking your behavior when you do those types of changes. So you have a lot of liberty to make those changes and act on the seller's behalf. It's when you have problems with your seller where it becomes challenging for me to help you get into a sticky situation. Most of the time it's in, why did the listing agent not input the price that I wanted? I've heard complaints like that from sellers. And then I have to come back to you and I have to ask you, you know, why, Bob, did you go ahead and put this listing on the MLS without the seller's approval on the price? And then Bob tells me, and luckily we don't have any Bobs in our group, but Bob tells me that, you know, he or she did not do an input sheet or did not use Transaction Desk to input it. They just went into the MLS, which you have the right to do, and input the listing based on what the seller verbally told them. So that's the reason for having the input sheets, at a bare minimum, at least have the input sheets filled in with the price and maybe the terms and things that, like the appliances that are included or not included, at least some basic information that you can have the seller initial. If you're the type of agent like me who has everything filled out and wants to cover their bases, great. That's fantastic. And it's really good with their paperwork and attentive to the details. Continue to be that way. But it is not a required document at this time. However, I may change that if we have more sellers unhappy with some of the agents that are inputting listings on the MLS. That is the only way that we communicate with our sellers on what gets populated into the MLS input fields. So you may want to go ahead and print those out if you want to. If you're a brand new agent and you're wanting to do it right, go ahead. There are two forms. There's Form 1 and then there's Form 1, which says print only. If you print it only, it makes it a lot easier to fill in when you're there at the site. So use the print only versions if you're going to just go out the door. If you need to do it inputting it, use Transaction Desk and use the listing because it starts tracking that behavior the moment you go into Transaction Desk and start to fill in the fields. And that has helped us greatly when there was one seller last month where they were very unhappy and I was able to give them some sort of information about what their agent did for them. They just didn't know the agent had gone in and inputted things based on what they had told them on Transaction Desk. So use some sort of way to communicate, even an email, to saying, hey, here's a copy of the MLS sheet. I want you to look it over, and if there's any changes, let me know. That's great communication with your seller. The agreement of the Form 1 is meant to communicate with the seller about what their property, how their property is going to be listed, and what's going to be said about their property. So if you have a fussy seller, you may want to go ahead and print that out and have them initial it, and you initial it and make that part of your agreement. So that you have a full disclosure. Form 17, there are three Form 17s that are available for the seller, and I don't want to have any confusion about this in the future. We talk about it in our initial orientation all the time, but there's a Form 17 for improved property, a Form 17C for land, unimproved property, and a Form 17 COMM, C-O-M-M, for commercial property. The only time that a Form 17 is not required would be if the seller is an estate or if the seller is going through a bankruptcy. Otherwise, they must fill out a Form 17, and that Form 17 must be filled out and delivered to the prospective buyer within 5 days of mutual acceptance. So if you have a seller that's really busy and that just didn't get around to doing the Form 17, so you could list it as a supplementary document on the MLS when you took the listing, you can go ahead and wait until you get a prospective buyer, although not advised, and you have 5 days after mutual acceptance to get that turned in with your file. So that's what we're looking for. We covered most of the main forms that are used when taking a listing. You think, wow, that's quick. We already deal all the stuff. The buyer, we have a lot more to talk about and a lot more agreements we have to use. But when you're representing a seller, there's not many documents needed. So with that, I'll let you guys go. Have a great week. We're going to cover some of the common, I think, challenges that you run into in getting a listing next week. And then we'll kind of get close to wrapping up our sequence. So if you are available, dial in next week to next Monday, same time, same place, and we'll catch you next week. Have a great day.